Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Be'a Daf Lamed Ches. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur 9 lines from the top of Daf Lamed Ches. The quote from the Mishnah, Hashoyel Kli Mechaveroi, and the Mishnah mentioned a case of Me'erev Yom Tov. Before we discuss today's Gemara, we'll say a word of disclaimer. And that is that today's shiur is a lot of the information is predicated on that which we discussed in our previous shiur. And our previous shiur happened to be a very long shiur because we spent a lot of time, we invested a lot of time in presenting basic definitions of the rules of tchum and different examples whereby those rules were illustrated. So as not to be guilty of over-explaining and possibly boring those that had listened to our previous shiur, we are not going to go into all of the basic definitions and explanations that we did, and rather we are continuing today's shiur, assuming that you are familiar with that which we discussed extensively in our previous shiur. For those who are first-time listeners, so of course, by all means, listen to our previous shiur, because otherwise, maybe some of the ideas of tchum will not be familiar. So with that having been said, the Mishnah described a person who borrowed a vessel from his friend, Erev Yom Tov, from before the onset of Yom Tov, and the Mishnah says, Keragli Hashoyel, the tchum definition of that vessel will be that of the individual who borrowed it. The Gemara asks, Pshita, is that not obvious? Once he borrows a vessel from before the onset of Yom Tov, it is then considered in his domain, so that the extent which he can carry the vessel would be the same extent as he himself, the borrower, can walk, and it wouldn't be bound by the location restrictions of the owner. So is this not obvious that when you borrow something Erev Yom Tov, it takes on the location of the borrower? Lo, Sricha, no, it's not obvious, but rather the Mishnah needs to be taught, Shelo Mosru Lo Elo B'Yom Tov, where the actual handing over of the borrowed vessel took place on Yom Tov proper. Now, as we said in our previous shiur, location definitions are determined by the location of the person or the individual at the onset of Yom Tov, at the point that Yom Tov or Shabbos enters. In this case, the vessel was physically located in the domain of the owner. It was handed over to the borrower on Yom Tov proper. Mahu detemo lav birshusei ukme. You might have thought without our Mishnah that it's not considered as having been placed mind-wise in the domain, in the possession of the borrower. Kamash Malon, the Mishnah therefore tells us that once there was an oral agreement to loan the vessel to the borrower, at that point it's said to be in his legal domain. Again, here you have a case where physicality is overruled by legal considerations, so that since the decision to have transferred it to the borrower had taken place before Yom Tov, even though the physical transfer doesn't take place till Yom Tov itself, nevertheless the decision that was made prior to Yom Tov determines the location of the vessel. We should point out that the expression in the Mishnah of Hashoyel Kli Mechavero, one who borrows, it means the decision to borrow was made even though it was b'dibur b'amo, even though it was through mere speech, but that decision was made me'erev Yom Tov, before Yom Tov. Messiah lay the Rabbi Yochanan. This supports Rabbi Yochanan. Diom Rabbi Yochanan, show kli mechaver me'erev Yom Tov, one who borrows a vessel from his friend from before Yom Tov, afal pi shelo nosnu lo elo b'Yom Tov, even though the actual handing over didn't take place till Yom Tov itself, harei hu keragli hashoyel. It becomes like the legs of the borrower. It means it takes on the location of the borrower, so that the tchum of the vessel will be like the tchum of the borrower, even though the actual taking of the vessel, the actual possession of the vessel, the transfer of possession, physical transfer, didn't take place till Yom Tov itself. Notice, marking wise, what we try to do is we dashed, underlined the expression just now, shelo nosno lo elo b'Yom Tov, and the corresponding dashed underlining four lines up was the way we explained the Mishnah, shelo mosru lo elo b'Yom Tov. The giving over was on Yom Tov. That's how we explained the Mishnah, and hence we can say that the Mishnah supports Rabbi Yochanan, was an Amora, that supports Rabbi Yochanan's halacha that we just read. B'Yom Tov keragle hamashil. If the borrowing took place on Yom Tov, that means that at the onset of Yom Tov, it was considered the owner's. The item was borrowed on Yom Tov proper. It does not take on the location of the borrower, but rather the mashil, the one who loaned it, the owner. It's the vessel then cannot be carried anywhere beyond the tchum of the owner. More says pshita. That it seems to be obvious. Rashi says, looking at Rashi together, about eight nine lines up from the bottom, b'yom tov harehu keragli hamashil pshita kevon de reisha b'diburo b'amu mukminon. Since we already established that the reisha, the earlier part of this halacha, was speaking about simple speech, when the Mishnah said hasheil kli mechaver me'erev Yom Tov, it means the decision to borrow was made erev Yom Tov. So therefore, in this case, this case must also be a function of decision making. V'seifonami hachi isa dafilu diburo lo have elo b'Yom Tov. Even the mere decision to loan hadn't take place till Yom Tov itself. So, if that being that that's the case, is it not pshita, as the Gemara asks? Is it not obvious that if the decision to borrow was made on Yom Tov, that the definition of the tchum location is that of the owner? Because as Yom Tov said, no decision had even been made to loan the vessel to someone else. So, of course, it has the tchum of the owner. Lo, it's not so obvious. Tzricha, I need to be taught this din of the Mishnah. What are the circumstances? Derogil v'shoyel mine. We're talking about someone who, on a regular basis, rogil, notice, if you look at the word rogil, phonetically you can see in the word regular, that on a regular basis, this borrower actually borrows this item from the owner. When Yom Tov comes around, this isn't something brand new, a new arrangement. This is something that they've been accustomed to doing, the loaning this vessel to the borrower. So mahu detema, you might have thought, birshusei komoikim lo lei, that the owner already in his mind placed it in the domain of the borrower. So if that would be true, that in the mind of the owner, he views his article as if it's already borrowed, so you might have thought then that the tchum definition of this article is like that of the borrower. Komash Malon, we are taught in this Mishnah that is not so. Meimar Omar, the owner figures. He figures to himself, Dilmo Mishkach Inish Achrina, the Ozil Vishoyel Mine. This fellow that's accustomed to borrowing from, maybe he'll find someone else. Mishkach is to find, Inish Achrina, another person, v'ozil, and go v'shalmanei, and borrow from him. So that since this is in the mind of the owner, the possibility of the borrower finding or getting the vessel from someone else, so it's not with any degree of certainty that the owner established in his mind that the article should be in the possession of the borrower. So the Mishnah's din needs to be taught. And once again, the reason is because we're dealing with a borrower that is accustomed to borrowing from this person. Nevertheless, since he didn't actually come to a firm decision from before Yom Tov, the tchum of the vessel remains as the tchum of the owner. V'chein isha sheshoala mechaverta. The Mishnah spoke about mayim umelach li sosa, a woman who borrowed in making dough. She had her own flour, but she borrowed water and salt from her friend for making the dough. The Mishnah ruled kiragle shtehen. The finished product, the cake or the bread, or the prepared dough after the water and salt is added and kneaded together with the flour, that dough, and of course the subsequent product, will have the tchum that is common to both women. As we said in our previous year, the lowest common denominator. So that if one woman had reestablished her tchum to the extreme north of the city, the other woman will not be able to carry the dough south of the city whatsoever. The topic that we're about to start is a long topic, and we've noted, first of all, with a marking that you see in the Gemara, right next to the Gemara text, the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, we haven't used this often, or we haven't used this possibly at all in Gemara markings, that we call this a sugya. In effect, it's a long marking, like any long point, long question, long answer. This too is a long marking, but it's an involved discussion, but it's a singular discussion. From here to the top of Lamed Ches Omed Aleph, therefore you see we have this long dashed vertical line indicating thusly. On the in the margin of the Gemara, we have an osei, we have a topic heading, and we also indicate the same thing. It goes to Lamed Ches Omed Aleph, so it's one train of thought with a great amount of give and take. Gam, we're reading our topic heading. Gam tchuma shehu isha shenosna mayim umelach me'akeves. We're saying that the tchum of the woman who provided the water and the salt is also a binding factor in location establishment. She'elas hamafteach, the key question. Lomo lo betela. Why do we not say that the water and salt become nullified? They lose all significance and become subsidiary to the other woman, to the woman who provided the flour. You know, if you would say that, so then the tchum of the dough would be according to the tchum of the woman who provided the flour. And yet, our Mishnah doesn't rule thusly. Our Mishnah says, Kiragle Shtehen. The Gemara opens up with a story. But the story, as we indicated earlier, really turns into an extensive legal discussion with a great deal of back and forth in the flow of the Gemara. So we're calling this a sugya. It opens, though, with a maisa. Kisolik Rabbi Abba Omar. When Rabbi Abba was planning to go to Eretz Yisrael, or when he was on the way, he said the following prayer. Yehei Ravo. Yehei Ravo is like in Hebrew, we see Yehi Ravson. It shall be the will of the Almighty. The Emo Milso de Tiskabel. That I should say something that will be I should say, over Torah learning that should be accepted to by the sages of my destination. Rashi adds, that I shouldn't become embarrassed. In other words, I should say something of wisdom and not say something foolish that would lead to my embarrassment. Kisolik, when he got there, when he arrived, Ashkiche, he met, and there are names, and there are two versions of who he met there, and hence you see the V'amri law squiggle under on the next line. So he found the Ashkiche he met up with, or he found the Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Chanina Bar Popi, Rabbi Zera, the Amri Law, another version of names, Rabbi Avov, Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi, Rabbi Yitzchok Nafcha. So he met a group of three Rabbonim. Who they were, two possibilities. V'yasvi v'ko Amri. They sat there and asked. And they sat there, they said, and they asked, Amai. Why is the dough described above, where one woman provided the flour, the other woman provided the water and salt? Why is it karagle shtehen? V'livdil mayim umelach legabi isa. Why not say that the water and salt, which represent a minority of the dough, why do we not say that they are botel? Rashi says, Amai keragli shtehen. Why does the dough have the tchum that is common to both of the women? Livtil isur tchum in demaimu melach, de zutri, legabi iso, de nefisha. Now in the Rashi we've dashed underlined the key words that the Mayim HaMelech, which is the minority of the dough, should be botel to the flour, to the rest of the dough, which is the majority. So the question then is, why is the dough considered karagli shtehen? Before we go further, you notice the triangle that just appeared, and on the side under the Mivneh heading we have triangles appearing in two different directions. Kedei la'akoiv achar shnei hatzdodim. This marking, the triangle marking, is used in order to keep track of the two sides of the argument. Elu she'elu es ha'she'ela, those that raised the question, so that the triangle with the point facing up indicates that the question is still pressing. And the Rabbi Abba, v'ahoychem achrov, then we will see Rabbi Abba and those that support him, shemenasim lahoshiv, that attempt to answer. So at each stage of the Gemara, we should take note. Are we reinstating the question that there should be botel and not have the tchum of both? Or is there a reasonable explanation as to why it should have the tchum of both and why we don't say bittel? So the key word is the issue of bittel. Is there bittel or not? Omar lohu Rabbi Abba. So Rabbi Abba responds, trying to explain why there should be no bittel, and that the mayim and melach retain their presence. When we say their presence, we're referring to they retain their tchum. So Omar lohu Rabbi Abba, Rabbi Abba says to them, we continue at the top of Amit Beis. Hare shinisarev loy kav chitin ba'asora kavin chitin shel chavero. Could you imagine that there is a mix-up of one kav is a measure. A kav measure of chitin, of Mr. A, gets mixed up with 10 kavin of chitin of Mr. B. Yochal halo v'chodi. Should the person who owns the majority consume all of it? And chodi means and be happy, and as we say in English, we say and laugh all the way to the bank. Are you going to suggest that just because one is minority and one is majority, that the minority becomes null and void and is therefore non-existent? Rashi at the top says v'chadi v'yismach b'dom v'shelo omabo, she'd be happy with something that he didn't work for. Kach zu, so too over here, ein shmo botel mikan hoyo v'konu hamayim hamayim shvisa etzla. We're not going to say that the name of the woman who provided the water should become botel. Botel is null and void. We're not going to say it should be botel. After all, the mayim and mice, the mayim location was originally that of the woman that owned it. The ha lo kashyalon mishum shehishiloson lo onos noson b'matone yehe muter. This doesn't present a problem for us that just because she loaned the water or gave the water as a gift to her friend, that it should not have the din of both kiragle shtehem. Do Omar, biyom tov hare hu kiragle hamashil. The Boser Ben Hashmosha says, Lina, after all, when it comes to tchum definition, we say we look at things as they were at the onset of yom tov. When you had a question that it should be mutter, meaning it shouldn't have the definition of both, it shouldn't have the location of both, your whole question was based on mishum mi'uta v'rubo kokashilu, just because of minority and majority, the water representing the minority. But you see from my response that minority is not reason for automatically saying bittel, just like we see in this mix-up of one kav getting mixed up in ten kav. Yet when it comes to a financial settlement, the person who owns the majority will have to certainly compensate the fellow whose one kav got mixed in. And we don't say just because it's a minority it becomes void and non-existent. Achiku ole. So the Rabbonin who heard Rabbi Abba, they laughed at him. Omar lohu, Rabbi Abba was insulted, and he said, "Gul saichu shakli, did I take your coats? Did I rip off your coats that you're laughing at me?" An expression, but all the same, he didn't understand what they were objecting to. Hodurachiku, they even laughed more. Omar Rabbi Shaya Shapirovu Dachikole. Rabbi Shaya strengthens the question. That's why we have the triangle point facing up. They were, let's say, it was legitimate on their part for them to laugh at him. And Rabbi Shaya goes on to explain. He's going to explain why Rabbi Abba's response to them is really a non-response. Why is it that Rabbi Abba avoided giving as his example a mixture of chitin and sorim, that one kav of chitin belonging to one person fell into ten kavim of sorim? Chitin is wheat, sorim is barley. Why did he not give an example like that of one kav of chitin getting mixed in with ten kavim of sorim of his friend? You know why he didn't use that example? The have le min b'sheino mino, because that's a mixture of unlike substances. O min b'sheino mino batiol, and when it comes to unlike substances, generally speaking, there should be bittel. Min b'sheino, two unlike substances, assuming for the time being we'll speak right now on a doraisa level. Without getting into, there's a myriad of details when it comes to mixtures. But in general, two unlike mixtures, the majority overrules, and the minority is botel. And as such, the fellow who, if in such a case of chitim and sorim, the lesser amount of chitim would be botel, and the greater amount of sorim, in fact, there is bittel. Chitin b'chitin nami, the case you cited of wheat getting mixed in with wheat. Also, the heed of the Rabbi Yehuda lo batil. Granted, there is a Tana that says that there's no bittel, and that's Rabbi Yehuda says there's no bittel, However, the Rabbanan Mivtal Botil. But according to the Rabbanan, there is Bittul. So that in all cases of mixtures, whether they're unlike substances that get mixed together or like substances that get mixed together, there is always Bittul. So the question remains, why is it that the Mayim and Melach, which are in the minority, are not botel to the flour? And why is it then that we're saying, why does the Mishnah say, Kirag Lishtehem? Omar Le Rav Safra. Rav Safra addresses Rav Hoshaya. He opens with an expression, Moshe Shapir Karmis. It's an expression. Moshe is a reference to a great man. Like Moshe Rabbeinu was a great man, so Rav Hoshaya was a great man. And he says, are you saying Shapir Karmis? Are you saying well? Are you saying something accurate? V'lo shmiya lehu ha diyama rabchia katesva mishmei derav. Did they not hear the teaching of Rabchia, which says, Haborer tsuros migronei shel chavero, chayov l'shalim lo demei chitim. Before we go further, just to talk about this halacha, a person who is a grain salesman. He sells grains. Let us say he sells a kilo of wheat. When one harvests wheat from the fields, it's inevitable that there's a certain amount of debris that gets mixed in. The debris here is referred to as tsuros, pebbles. So when I sell a kilo of wheat, it's understood in the marketplace that you're really buying 900 grams of wheat. There's, and the numbers we're using are arbitrary just to illustrate our example. There's 100 grams of debris that is inevitably present in a kilo of wheat. Imagine someone comes along to this silo and he, without the permission of the owner, he goes ahead and picks out, chooses out, or sifts out all the debris from the grains. The result of that is that when a kilo of wheat is going to be sold, it's going to be 100% wheat. The owner, in effect, is losing out, because the owner was able, up till now, he was able to sell a kilo of wheat and get a price X, a certain amount. He'd get a dollar per kilo, when in effect, the dollar he was receiving was in exchange for 900 grams. So there was a certain profit, an accepted marketplace profit that a person was making because of the presence of the pebbles. Now that the pebbles are not there because they were sifted out, this owner is actually losing out when he was able to make a dollar for selling only 900 grams. He's now having to sell. He's now selling an extra 100 grams for the same dollar. So whereby he was making a profit from the presence of the pebbles, he's now losing out on that. So the halacha we just read says that one who does that, one who comes without express permission, he goes and sifts out the grono, the granary of his friend, he, the sifter, he has to compensate. Chayav l'shalim lo demei chitim. He has to then sell him the value, as per, in our example, the value of 100 grams per kilo of wheat. Alma, we see from this, kilo, chasri. Kilo is a word indicating measure. He has caused a loss in terms of measure. Rashi says, Almo Kilo Chasrei. We're looking at Rashi a few lines down from here in the Rashi column. Almo Kilo Chasrei Mitnei Shechoser Midoso, because there was a diminishing of measure, Mischayev Lo. He became obligated to compensate. He diminished the amount of pebbles that were in there. And because of that diminishing of pebble quantity, he caused the owner a loss. V'afagav delo midi shavu, even though the pebbles themselves weren't worth anything. V'kol shekein mayim u'melach delo batli b'mi'utayu, and certainly, carrying the analogy over to our case of the water in the dough, we will say the water and the salt, just because they're a minority amount, they're not rendered insignificant and void. The midi de taimahu mishum chiyuvo de mamona lo batil b'miuta, something that has let's say monetary ramifications, just because it's little in quantity, it doesn't become void. So Rav Safra continues. He says, Hochanami kilo chasrei. So too over here, with regard to the mayim and melach, that represents a certain amount of quantity, of measure. And just as we saw in the case of Boratzurus Migrona Shechavero, just because you're dealing with something of a minority in terms of quantity, it doesn't lose significance. So too over here. Omar Lei, and let's just, before we go on to Abaye, so too over here, with the case of Mayim Melech, that explains why Keragle Shtehem, the woman who provided the Mayim Melech, retains her significance. And therefore, the dough will have the tchum of both women. Omar le Abaye. Abaye responds. He says, "V'lo shoni le lamor bein momon sheyesh loy toivin lamomon sheein loy toivin." Do you not make a distinction between the case of money that has someone claiming? In other words, we have the case of Boratzurus Megon Shchavero. In that case, Reb Chiyosdin, there was the owner of the grains was Tovea, was claiming compensation. There was a compensation claim. How can you compare, says Abaye, how can you compare a case where there is a seeking of monetary compensation to a case where there's no seeking of monetary compensation? In our case in the Mishnah with the women and the preparation of the dough, the woman who was providing the water was giving something of value, but she wasn't placing any claim to it. She was loaning it. She was giving it over to her friend, and without any claims laid against her friend. Therefore, it should be batel. And with that in mind, it should be batel. We reinstate the question of why then are we saying keragle shtehen? Omar lei. So Rav Safra responds to Abaye. Abaye, who premised his whole, response based on Momon Sheish Lo Tovim, according to Abaye, the following stands to reason. According to Abaye, if you take Abaye's train of thought and go with it all the way, Rav Safra will say that would mean that there will, that in cases where it's Momon Sheish Lo Tovim, then it's understandable that there should be bittul. There should always be bittul. And in the case where there is only in cases that it's momon sheyesh lo tovim, then we understand why there is no bittul. So Rav Safra says, what is it? Is the issue of mixtures and how we determine them based on this issue of monetary claims and or lack thereof. So Amar Lei, Rav Safra says, Ulitamech, according to you that everything is totally on ownership, and only if there is momosh, if only if it's there's toivim, do we say that the identity of the other owner is retained. Well, Hall, Diyamarav Chisto. Here we have a halacha that lasts a couple of lines. And this halacha deals with mixtures of meat, kosher meat with unkosher meat. What is the halacha? What is Rav Chista's halacha? Aleph, nevela betela b'shchuta, lefi shi'i efshir l'shchuta sh'teil se nevela. The Rav Chista teaching is based on a distinction made between min b'mino and min b'she'eno mino. When you have two unlike substances, then we can say that that one becomes botel to the other, that the minority becomes botel to that. Well, let's just say this again, that when you have a min b'mino mixture, then we can say this correction, when you have a min b'she'eno mino mixture, unlike substances get mixed together, we can talk about bittel. If they're like substances, then no bittel. That's by way of general heading. Now, let's see how to apply that. Aleph says, nevela betela b'shchuta. Nevela, unkosher meat, which is in this case a minority amount, will be botel in the majority of shchuta, but not because a majority per se, but because of another consideration. Lefi she'i efshir l'shchuta she'te'oseh nevela. Because it's impossible for the majority in this case to become like the minority, which means something that is kosher. Kosher meat cannot become unkosher. So that according to Rav Chista's analysis, he tends to look first at the majority and establish, can it become like the minority or not, and then define it as a min b'mino or min b'she'eno mino mixture. Min b'she'eno mino being a type of mixture that there is bittel, and a min b'mino type mixture, certainly according to the Tana Reb Yudah, when there's two like substances, no bittel. So in the case of nevela, minority of nevela falling into majority of shchuta, we say there is bittel, there is the nevela does not pose a problem, because lefisha efshar l'shchuta sh'teyoseh nevela, because it's impossible for shchuta, for kosher meat, to become unkosher. However, shchuta eino b'teilo b'nevela, if you have a minority of kosher meat, shchuta means slaughtered properly, a minority of kosher meat that falls into a majority of unkosher meat, meat that comes from an animal that wasn't slaughtered, a drop dead, that's an avela. The shchuta does not become botel in the nevela, and why is that? Lefi she'efshir l'nevela she'te'ose shchuta. Because it's possible for the nevela, and this might sound a little odd, but it's possible for it to become kosher. Now, what do you mean? If it wasn't slaughtered, how could it become kosher? So the explanation to that is, in the event that you have, let us say, unkosher meat, but it spoils, becomes rancid, it starts rotting, that's something that a Gentile would not eat. And because it's something that he would not eat, it loses its nevela status. Being that it loses its nevela status, you have on your hands a min b'mino mixture. Just like shchuta is something that is not forbidden to eat, rotten nevela is not something that's forbidden to eat. So therefore, shchuta that gets mixed up, shchuta eino betela b'nevela, because lefi she'efshir l'nevela she'te'ose shchuta. We didn't say this earlier, but Rav Chista's halacha has ramifications with regard to the realm of tumas nevela, touching nevela. If one touches nevela, he becomes tomei. Let's say you have a mixture of nevela and shchuta. So the first halacha is if you have a minority of Nevela that falls into a majority of Shchuta, he ruled it's Botel. That means that all the meat is considered Shchuta, and there would be no Tuma if you touch it. It's definitely Tohor. And the reason for that is because of the way he defines mixtures, he looks at the majority, can it become like the minority? And in that case, the majority, which was Shchuta, cannot become Nevela. Therefore, there it's a min b'she'eno mino mixture, and there is bittel. So the Nevela is botel, becomes non-existent. The other way around, you have a minority of Shchuta falls into a majority of Nevela. And as we explained, the majority can become like the minority. The Nevela can lose its Nevela status. And hence, even though the minority is Shchuta, and Shchuta does not convey Tuma, it nevertheless is viewed as a min bamino mixture. And according to the Tana Rabbi Huda, min bamino eino botel. What does that mean, though, for Tuma purposes? It means that the Shchuta does not lose its identity. And therefore, someone who touches a piece of meat in this mixture, he does not become Tomei Vadai. We cannot describe him as definitely Tomei because of the presence of the Shchuta meat. The Shchuta doesn't lose its identity. And as a result, any piece of meat that he might have touched might be the Shchuta meat. And therefore, if this person goes ahead, let's say, and touches Truma Tomei needs to be burnt. But in this case, I don't know that he would be conveying Tuma to the Truma. Therefore, you wouldn't be allowed to burn Truma touched by a person that had touched a piece of meat in this type of mixture. Minority of Shchuta with falling into a majority of Nevela. So far, that is Rav Chisda's halacha. Is there bittul or is there no bittul? But now, according to what Abaye claimed before, Rav Safra says, Hochi Nami, according to you, Abaye, Dechi is lo bailim, lo betela. That when, let us say, in the case of the Nevela, that minority of Nevela that fell into majority of the Shchuta, so Rav Chisda says there's bittul. But let's say the Nevela was owned by someone else. Two people were involved here. One person owning the Nevela and the other person owning the Shchuta. That where the Nevela is owned by someone and he wants to get compensation for his Nevela, are you going to say that there will be no bittul just because there's an owner of the Nevela? A separate owner? And if you're going to in fact say thusly that ownership creates significance and lack of ownership creates insignificance, let's see, we're going to see that doesn't really check out. V'hotanya Omer Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri tells us that Chetzei Hefker Koinen Shvisa Afa Pi She'ein Lohem Bailim Doimin Kami She'yesh Lohem Bailim. Chetzei Hefker are unowned articles. An article that's found left outside in a public, in a thoroughfare. Someone finds a cup on a highway. How far can you carry that cup? So Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri says the cup, it's unowned, found in some public area, it's hefker, it's unowned. It acquires its location based on where it is found, where it is located. And he says that even though it doesn't have an owner, it's as if it's owned, meaning it's as if it's owned and gains its own location definition. What do we see from here? We see from here that just because it doesn't have an owner, it doesn't lose its significance. So that Rav Safra is showing Abaye that issue of ownership doesn't make a difference. Just because something is unowned, as you, Abaye, were trying to claim, it should lose its significance, that's not so. Here we have Chefsi Hefker. They're unowned, but they don't lose their significance. And as a result of this, we can understand the Mishnah. There is no loss of significance, whether it's owned or not owned. And therefore, we understand why the woman who contributed the mayim, doesn't lose that woman's location. And hence, the dough will be limited, just like the Mishnah teaches. So as Ravi Abba wanted to say before, the Mishnah is understandable. And hence, that was the response that Rabbi Abba gave before was a good response. Omar Lei, Abaye says back, Mi komedamis isura limamona. Are you trying to compare two different realms of halacha to one another? The realm of Isur to the realm of Momonus. Isur, as Momonus has to do with the monetary concerns. Isura botio. Matters of Isur, of that which is permitted versus not permitted, kosher, unkosher, that's the realm of Isur. There is bittul. And the issue of the women with the mayim and melach, there's no money, there's no issue of mominus that is of concern to us. And since there's no issue of mominus that is of concern to us, there should be bittul. Matters that are mominus, there is no bittul. So since, in the case of the mayim and melach, there's no issue whatsoever of something being claimed as owned or unowned, it's purely an issue of tchum, something like that lends itself to becoming void. Hence, the question remains. And that's why we have the triangle, this last triangle with the point facing up, just like we had originally when the question was presented. As Rashi explains, he elaborates on Abaye. Abaye is saying, originally, Rabbi Abba tried to say back to the group of Rabbonim that were perplexed by the Mishnah, Rabbi Abba was trying to argue against them a case which truly involved mominous, monetary claims. Abaye is responding to Rabbi Abba's original assertion that we should compare the cases to one another. Abaye says, how can you compare a case where someone has a monetary claim? Of course, where someone has a monetary claim, even if he represents in the confusion or in the mix-up the minority, of course his claim doesn't become void just because there is an issue of minority. The question of the Mishnah does not involve monetary claims. It involves the realm of Isur Tchumin, which is a question of something that is of a totally non-monetary nature. It's the Isur, what we call the realm of Isur Veheter, permitted versus not permitted to partake of or eat or move or whatever. But it has nothing to do with monetary claims. In that realm of non-monetary issues, of something that's purely Isur, relating to the dinim, the rules of Tchum, there certainly is bittul that can take place. Well, that having been said, the time am I. Well, then why is the Mishnah's din as it is? Why is it that the Mayim u'Melach, which is the minority, and we're dealing with simply the Isur of Tchum, why is it not Batel? Now, you can see we have a marking, the double underline is used to highlight answers to be Masbir, the Mishnah. Abaye Omar, Gzeiro Shemo Teose Iso Beshutfis. We're ruling in the Mishnah, Karagli Shtehen, in anticipation of a case of two women that jointly owned all of the ingredients, that jointly owned the flour and all the other ingredients. In such a case where the ingredients from beginning to end are jointly held, so then certainly the dough will be restricted to the common tchum of both women. So in anticipation of that case, even in a case where one contributes only the water and salt, her presence remains of significance. So Abaye says it's a gzera. Rava Omar, Rashi points out that Rava is not really arguing on Abaye. Rava is just giving another explanation as to why the contributor of the Mayim and Melach is not Botel, why her tchum remains of significance. Tavlin l'taime avidi. Spices are there for producing taste. V'taime lo botel. If you contribute something that adds to the taste of what is being prepared, even if it happens to be the minority, it doesn't lose its significance. The Mishnah had spoken about contributing these different substances. We saw tavlin l'kedera, mayim melach l'isa. So addressing the tavlin, the spices, and the salt in the case of the dough, those things don't lose their significance. And therefore, the tchum will be defined by that which is common to both women, the common tchum. We continue at the top of Lamed Tes Omer Aleph, Rav Ashi Omar. Rav Ashi explains why there is no bitol here. Mishum dahave le dovor shiyesh lo matirin. Because this comes under the category of items that, albeit they're forbidden now, there's restriction now, tomorrow, when it's not Yom Tov anymore, there is no restriction. It's we'll call it a time-based restriction. And that's called Dovar Shiyesh Lo Matirin, something that has allowance, permission later on. And there's a rule, V'chol Dovar Shiyesh Lo Matirin Afilu Be'elef Lo Botil. Even if it represents a minority of 1/1000th of whatever it got mixed into, it nevertheless is not botel. Now, we saw this concept quite a bit earlier in the Masechta, way back at the beginning of the Masechta, in the case of the eggs that got mixed up. And you can look back at Daf Gimel to see where this was mentioned earlier. But this is the rule. Dover Sheish L'Matirin, and the realm of Tchum, being it's Yom Tov related, it's time related, even if it represents a minority item, it doesn't lend itself, it's not subject to the rules of Bittul. So therefore the woman who contributed the Mayim HaMelach, since we're dealing with the Isur of Tchumen, we cannot say that there is Bittul, just because it happens to be a minority of the dough. Rabbi Yehuda poter b'mayim. Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah said that the tchum of the woman who contributes the water, her tchum is botel. It becomes void, and hence if you have a woman contributing water to dough, the dough will have the tchum of the other woman, the woman who provided the other ingredients, the flour, etc. Mayim in melach lo. So we infer from that which Rabbi Yehuda taught that mayim is botel, meaning the tchum of the one contributing mayim is botel. However, when it comes to salt, no. Mayim melach lo, and that the woman who contributes the salt, her tchum remains defined, remains present, and her the extent to which she can walk is me'akev. The Gemara asks, "V'ha Tanya, do we not have a source in which Rabbi Yehuda appears, in which he says otherwise?" Rabbi Yehuda Omer Mayim Umelach Betalin Bein Beisa Bein Bekdera. And just if you focus on that which we dashed under Bekavona Melach Betalin. Just before, we had dashed underline melach lo, that melach is not botel. Lo kashya. There is no problem. Ha b'melach stoimis, ha b'melach istroiknis. If it's melach stomis, that's a certain type of salt, comes from stone, so it is botel. It's a type of salt. And it's a fine salt. So fine salt, not that it necessarily has to come from stone proper, but that's where fine salt originally or was associated with stone. Fine salt is botel. Rocky salt, chunky salt, is something that is not botel. V'ha Tanya, we ask, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Mayim Umelach Betalin Beisa, V'ein Betalin Bekedera, Mifnei Rotva. Here we have another question. You'll notice that here we want to emphasize the issue of the water. Rabbi Yehuda says, Mayim, and that you see we dash on Mayim, Mayim Umelach Betalin Beisa, and we dashed underline V'ein Betalin Bekedera. But in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda indicated that Mayim is Botel. We should just translate here. It says Ein Betalin Bekedera. It's not Botel in a pot of food being cooked up because of the roitav, because of the gravy. Rashi points out that when the Mishnah taught under Rabbi Yehuda's name, Rabbi Yehuda Poter B'Mayim, he was exempting from tchum restrictions the issue of Mayim, but whether it's the case of the dough or the case of the pot of food being cooked up. So here we have a contradiction. Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah Poter B'Mayim in the case involving Kedera, and here Rabbi Yehuda says that Mayim is not Botel in Kedera. So here, as we say, the issue concerns the water. Lo kashya, there is no problem. Ha b'arva, ha b'raka. If it's a type of dish that's very thick, so that the gravy is not pronounced, it's not noticeable, it's a thick dish that's being cooked up, so there, the mayim is botel. However, if it's a type of dish that has it has gravy in it, and the gravy is nicker, it's obvious, it's recognizable, so then the mayim will not be botel. And that's this brisa that we just read, that Rabbi Yehuda says that mayim in a kedera is not botel, because we're talking about something that is raka. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.